Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio, the first show that we're doing in 2022. And I'm thrilled. I'm Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is still the amazing.
Hi, Laurie. I'm Bernie Siegel, calling in from the Catskill Mountains.
Tell us how cold it's going to be tomorrow, because when you told me, it was like, whoa, I'm glad I'm in New York City. How cold is it going to be?
Well, they're saying -7 in the morning with a 20 to 30 below wind chill factor.
All righty. Well, stay warm. We'll tell you that. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We believe at Coach Chat, if you change your perspective, you can change your entire life. We developed this show for coaches and for those interested in one of the fastest-growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And we have someone really special for you today, Danny Chikhtin-Koplik. Hey, Danny.
Hi, how are you? How are you, Laurie and Bernie?
We're good and anxious to get at you, but I want to tell the folks who you are first.
Sure.
then we're gonna get at you. Danny is the founder of DTK Resources, a boutique executive coaching / leadership consulting firm in New York City. She partners with senior executives to reimagine and evolve their leadership practices. She's known for her bold and provocative strategic thinking and her ability to drive insight. She challenges the status quo, we love that, interrogates legacy systems, and digs into company cultures to create more human, equitable, and inclusive organizations. A longtime champion of parity and equality, and she told me the difference of that, parity and equality in the workplace. This is made special by her training in neuroscience of bias and racism. Danny calls herself the CEO Whisperer. So we're going to find out what's going on for 2022. Danny, welcome to Coach Chat.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be your first guest for the new year. That's very special. Thank you.
We're honored to have you. Bernie, take it away, and we'll get started.
All right. So before we begin with all the really interesting stuff for 2022, well, this will be interesting, too. A lot of our listeners like to know something about your journey, how you got to do what you're doing right now.
Well, thank you for asking. I will preface it by saying that it is a quintessential scenic route. There was no direct path here, although taken together in the aggregate, it makes complete sense. So I started my career after dismissing the idea of law school in the entertainment industry, which I loved, and it's where I really cut my teeth on marketing. So even in coaching or advising, I always think through that marketing lens. It's always, you know, what's the fastest way past between two points, and how do you sell the thing? How do you get people to yes? So that's that part. After that, I went to the other side. That was the buyer side. I went to the seller side, a small ad agency. And after that, second round in the movie business, I became a soccer mom, CEO of my home for quite a while, and loved it. Wouldn't trade it for anything. But in the meantime, while I was doing that, I was very active and very involved. And my husband was a member of Young Presidents Organization. Truth be told, I was much more active in it than he was. I really got some great business acumen there, learned from a lot of leaders, benefited from their education. So I was sort of primed, and my husband was a small business owner, so I saw things kind of in microcosm. I decided when I was coming back into the workplace that I needed to challenge myself. And a couple of people had suggested that coaching would be perfect for me. I sleuthed it out. I found a neuroscience-based program at NYU. I fell in love with it, and the rest is kind of history. I continue to study with that guru of mine and read and everything else. And so I would say that through all of this, I've gone from more of a transactional coach to a teacher to a mentor to a thought leader, a writer, a speaker. And again, yes, I do push back. I push back against assumptions all the time, which maybe doesn't make me popular in the short term, but they usually prove out in the long term.
Well, it happens when we're New Yorkers, and I'm just assuming you may be a native New Yorker. Are you?
Yes.
There you go.
Well, that
yes.
explains it all then, I guess. And we feel doubly lucky now to get you on the show because it sounds like you're busy. You're very busy. I love the term boutique executive coaching. And can you explain a little bit about that? And then also you have your terminology is fantastic. Also, a CEO whisperer, how does that fit into your boutique executive coaching. Yes, I think I got all that
Thank you. You know what? Nobody has ever asked me that question, but it's an excellent one. What it comes down to is, I mean, I could say solopreneur. I am a one-person shop because I don't trust anybody else to do it the way I do it or to have the same insights. I mean, it sounds pretty arrogant, but I never wanted to work for somebody else. I didn't want to be in a coaching shop. I didn't want to have to follow anybody else's rules, and I didn't want any coaches under me. I wanted it, you know, and if I had to be a smaller curated client base, then so be it. I had to make every client a priority, and that's sort of why I call it a boutique.
I love that. And the CEO whisperer? What's that?
Yeah,
it's
fun. I mean, I was called that in a magazine interview. I like to work at the top. I work strategically. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to get you out of the exact umbrella of coach. And I do more than that. Obviously, I help people overcome obstacles. But I do work at a very strategic level. And, you know, I see things systemically. I've gone into a client. I had a client for about 4 years, and I was coaching individuals there. And because I was coaching the individuals, I got to see some real holes in their system. And, you know, said, you have no onboarding program. Okay, then they started, you know, lots of things like that, or even the performance review and the feedback and mentoring. They just didn't have a clue. So when I get to see it like that, the connection has to be to the CEO.
Well,
cool.
Say it starts with the top, and that makes a lot of sense. When you're looking at a typical organization that you may go into, what are you finding in terms of leadership best practices or no leadership best practices being practiced within the organization? I ask that because in my experience in 15, 20 years I'm doing this, it's typically I find it horrible in terms of the lack of real leadership best practices out there.
Yeah, you know, I wrote an article maybe 10 years ago about different kinds of leadership, and I said the problem right now is that we've got a ton of leaders but a lack of leadership. Like, everybody's being trained as a leader. Nobody, you know, everybody's got to go through leadership training, it seems like, or it's available to huge numbers of people. It's not elite anymore. And so, but the leadership is where the issue is, and I hear you. The thing for me is that I have given up going into big companies, corporations, big, you know, Fortune whatever's, publicly traded. I can't deal within their rigid systems. And so I work very well with smaller private firms, entrepreneurial startups like that. And so with an entrepreneurial, they each have their own unique issues. So with founders and entrepreneurs, it's very difficult for them to give up the reins, even though their expertise is in the product that they've developed, not in managing people. So it's sometimes a hard sell, but when they agree, when they see it, it's appreciated and it really changes things. I mean, there's sometimes when I've spoken to founders and they're at the cusp of hiring like an HR person. And I really want to interrogate that. Is that because your paperwork is so much, you need someone to do benefits, or is it because you need someone to manage people? You know, you don't need you don't need that as much as you need an executive coach to teach you how to manage, you know, or a leadership consultant. So that happens there in smaller firms. You get the same kind of thing where there's a lot of ego invested, and so it is very difficult. But I will say that COVID and the murder of George Floyd have accelerated some progress that I saw before, but progress in the leadership models around. And that's a good thing. We are now by circumstance driven to a place of more compassionate leadership, of seeing people for who they are, for tolerating error, for encouraging risk-taking, for all kinds of things. I mean, the leader has a much different role, much more compassionate, much more engaged, and I think that's a good thing.
Very insightful. Thanks.
Yeah, and I think you will agree that the leadership is definitely more challenged also, because it used to be a rule book, you know, it used to be you do this and A plus B equals C. Well, the alphabet has gone wild.
Right.
And, you know, 2020 was insane. 2021 was, we're on a roller coaster. And I'm wondering, what do you see as some of the challenges, knowing that another catastrophic thing could totally wipe this conversation out and make no sense, but let's go for it anyway. What do you see as some
sure.
of the big challenges in 2022 when it comes to leadership and just working? Just it seems
sure.
like people are trying to find a place in the workplace now, find something
yeah.
that is bigger.
I agree. Well, the first obvious thing is that leaders may have thought that work from home was temporary, but it's not. It's here to stay. So that is a big, big change. And there was, you know, an in-the-moment adjustment to it, but now they can do some fine-tuning on it, because aside from the fact that so many people prefer it, or at least some sort of hybrid thing, and we get into this too, but the younger generations entering the workforce want that autonomy. They don't want to have to go into a place. They don't want to have to commute. They don't want to, you know, dress for work, all of these things. So I see that, you know, work from home was a big challenge, but now it's got to become, I hate the word normal, but normal, the norm. But on top of that, there is still so much generalized stress among everyone. Again, you know, not knowing which variant is coming around the corner, not knowing which mask to buy, not knowing what's the right PCR or rapid antigen. You know, there are so many confusing issues that people have to confront on a daily basis, and they have to adjust to this new sort of management leadership thing. You know, it's that the new cohort, and it's not just one generation, it's two, it's millennials and Gen Z, are almost half the workplace at this point. So we're going to have to start listening to the things that they want, and that's a big deal, but that can be very stressful to the older population. You know, this is what I know. As you said, there was a rule book. This is how it always was. This is how my boss did it. This is how I'm doing it. You know, these are the expectations. This is how you get ahead. And all of that, you know, it used to be that you needed FaceTime to get promoted. I don't know if that exists anymore. I don't know.
I
don't either.
Sorry.
No, I just said I don't know either, truthfully.
Yeah, and so in addition to all of that, the worry and the stress, there's been a profound loss of focus among so many people, you know, people with kids at home and just dealing with this generalized stress, this impending threat of more COVID, of what's going to happen, of the political scene. There is just a lot of insidious threat and worry, and it results in a loss of focus. It results in a loss of energy. There's a lot of talk about COVID fatigue, DEI fatigue. It's a problem. We have to make sure that well-being and good health are part of any leadership agenda.
and I'm getting stressed just listening to you. not that you're causing it, but all those are relevant issues. When I go skiing during the week, I go into a locker room, and half or more of the people don't wear masks, and I find that stressful. And do I say something or not say something? And I put my own signs up, and they're ignored. And I'm sure that's going on in the workplace too, where some people are lying about their vaccination status, and some employees hear that. So Jamie Dimon just said, a couple of times the last few months, people have to come into the office.
They have all through. My daughter works there,
yeah.
And she went every day during the worst of COVID. Since 2020, mm-hmm. She's been going to the office every day.
That's talk about stress. So what are some of the things that now, I'm going to calm down. What are some of the things that, these employees can do in terms of reducing some of that stress?
Well, we call it the healthy mind platter. You've got to get exercise. You've got to rest. You've got to build time in for just thinking and creating and really give the body a break and give the mind a break. That's part of it. There are others, you can meditate, you can do this and that.
Mm-hmm.
What I found on Amazon these great worry stones. They are polished like semi-precious stone that have an indent for your thumb, and it's so smooth. I just rub it back and forth. I've given it to clients to keep in their jacket pockets.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going into something, it's an instant calm, which I love. But in terms of the COVID and vaccine and all of that, I did see a very creative, innovative idea. Company came up with the idea, and they were trying to sell these sort of Live Strong rubber bracelets, and they had no takers for big corporate events. They created ones that indicated different levels of vaccine status so that people could wear them, and nobody would have to ask, and nobody would have to respond. I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean,
yeah.
It worries me because taken too far, it can become a yellow armband, but I just thought it was an interesting nonverbal way of dealing with something that can get contentious.
Right.
I think times are calling for innovative ideas. I'm wondering, though, and certainly it's interesting because I know Starbucks recently released its mandate. At first, everybody had to be vaccinated, and now suddenly because of something in Congress didn't go through, it's like, okay, they released it. So I'm wondering, I know that's part of flexibility, but leadership, it's like what can they do to prepare for an unknown future? What are some of the strategic things you would help them do? It's like, we don't know what's going on and what's going to happen next. So what can you suggest to leadership?
Well, I think they have to be bold. I think they have to act independently. If they have conviction about something, and more corporate conviction is an issue. Purpose is a word that comes up. So it's being really clear about a company's purpose and really clear about what your purpose is as a leader and marrying the two, then being bold, surrounding yourself with creative and innovative thinkers. I think that's very, very useful. It's very difficult, obviously, to be a leader now, and we have to just look at everything through this growth mindset where anything's possible. And the great phrase that I like is that it's not about proving yourself, it's about improving yourself.
I like that. I was just reading today a quote from Ken Blanchard, who said about leaders, do they want to serve or be served? And I think that the leadership today, he focuses on servant leadership, let's call it servant leadership. It's really something that I believe in, too, if I do work with him. And it's so important, but oftentimes the mindset is leaders lead by their title.
Yeah.
I find that's the case. Without building any trust, from the people underneath them. But what do you find are some of the maybe problems or challenges that these leaders have.
Yeah, lack of humility, I would say, is the biggest one, because when you don't know what's happening, when things are uncertain, you have to have a degree of humility, and you have to always be learning. I'm just in the middle of writing a piece that has a section on experts and expertise. And, you know, my area of the world right now is diversity, equity, and inclusion. So my thesis is, don't go to people who call themselves experts. Why? You know, if you think about the local news, they say this is a developing story. It's a developing story. Expertise indicates mastery at a moment in time. And you want someone who is going to involve and take in new information, think creatively, think innovatively, course correct when necessary. So experts, like, how do they course correct? If you say you're expert at something in particular, you know, if you're not growing, you're kind of dying on the vine. You become irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's my attitude about expertise and about having to constantly grow and listen and take in information. And I think that leaders are understanding that they've got to listen more, and they have to show their own vulnerability. They've got to model behavior for the rank and file, because it doesn't do well if a leader is up at, you know, some alpine retreat, you know, skiing every day and doing all these things, and the people are delivering groceries for Whole Foods. You know, it's bad optics, and it just shows a big difference, a chasm in values. You know, it's okay for me, but it's not okay for you. And so I just think that leaders have to share in some of the pain, and they have to really listen and learn from what people are telling them.
That's interesting. And I know you have some, we'll use the word, you keep using bold ideas about feedback, and that would be feedback to employees and feedback to employers. What are your thoughts on that? It's like, because that seems to be what we need to base some of our decisions on leadership, you know, on. We need to say, okay, what are people telling us? What are customers telling us? What are employees telling us? What's your feeling on feedback? What's the best way to give and get?
Well, feedback is essential. It's essential, but it has to be quality feedback. And it has to be, hopefully, positive. You know, when we give negative feedback, the brain shuts down as soon as we hear the first word, like, you didn't, or something like that. You know, the brain shuts down and doesn't take in anything more. So feedback really needs to be constructive, and we get into a trap when we save it all for one time of the year. To me, it's like, any example you could possibly give when you're giving it annually is going to be stale, and you can't learn from it. And furthermore, if you were making mistakes or errors early on and you wait until the end, you've continued making that mistake or maybe worsened it, whereas if you course correct in real time, you have the benefit of better proficiency, more knowledge, all of that, and the hit when you get any kind of constructive feedback is so much less. And the funny thing about feedback is that it is a process or an interaction that is abhorred as much by the givers as the getters. Givers don't like doing it. It's an awkwardness. They want to be liked. They may be worried about their own upward feedback, that people aren't going to like them if they deliver bad feedback. So that's why it has to be defanged a little bit and done in smaller increments. I'm a big believer in that. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking, I normally release a how-to of how to give and receive feedback before the end of the year, before performance reviews, hoping that it will help people. This year I caught myself. I said, well, if I don't believe in end-of-the-year reviews, why am I, you know, stoking this fire here? I'm going to release something about giving feedback at the beginning of the year so that it becomes a practice throughout the year as opposed to waiting for that year-end moment. I hope that answered your question. I don't know.
I so agree
with that. I tell leaders typically stop. Look, if you're in a large corporation, as you said before, they've got this thing that's hard to change. It's like changing the Titanic's course.
Yes.
But in a small organization, I would say feedback should be 24/7.
Sure.
And I would say that if you even use the word feedback, somebody's brain immediately shuts down, right? Because people think it's negative. So I think people should be praised when they do something right, which, you know, people aren't typically, and saying thank you was not praising. And then, as you say, course correct along the way. As long as they trust you as a leader, they'll really appreciate it, because you can't grow unless you get feedback.
That's right. You really can.
But I remember many years ago when I was a corporate executive, and I'd be given a form at the end of the year, and I have to remember something to put on it.
Awful.
And it's usually something negative and pisses people off, and they walk out unhappy. But I learned over the years that it stressed me out too. Just what you're saying. Everyone hates these forms, and there are better ways to do it, as you said.
I don't know if you're familiar with this phrase, but Marshall Goldsmith came up with a really, really clunky phrase. But if we can figure out an alternative that says the same thing, he said, instead of feedback, think in terms of feed forward.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is really what we're trying to do. I mean, what good is it rehashing stuff from the past? You can't change it.
Right.
You can't change
I like that.
It. Right? You can only correct yourself as you go forward and try to develop better behaviors and patterns and skills and all of that. It has to be additive. The second we start trying to take away, everybody's threatened. Everybody.
Right.
So how are you recommending the execution of let's say, feed forward? Would you say that in the moment, give feedback and then just totally eliminate the annual review?
I don't like annual reviews. I don't like them. I don't like ranking. I don't like percentages. I mean, particularly in smaller firms, I worked with a firm that was maybe 80 people, and they were drawing, you know, it couldn't be statistically relevant when four people answer a particular question. It became absurd, right? There is no statistical relevance when only four people are answering the question. So I very much believe that managers, I know they're busy, I know they're stressed, but they will get so much more from their employees if they take the time on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis and in real time. And the thing that they can do that's even better than taking on that onus is encouraging their employees, their direct reports, to ask them for feedback or for direction or clarity. That's another huge thing. One of the things that mucks up feedback is the lack of clarity. So if someone's given an assignment and they're really confused about it, but they go do it and they do it wrong, then they get criticized for it. Everybody, you know, then nothing was gained. But if they say from the outset, would you mind explaining this a little bit more? I'm not exactly sure what the objective is, or I need a little help figuring out how to go about it. Look at how much time that saves and what the better work product is.
That's great. I know I've said to leaders who said to me, well, I tell my employees my door is always open, and I say, does anyone ever come in? And they say, well, actually, no. So
you have to make it safe. I mean, people are afraid of making mistakes, and they're afraid of humiliating themselves. So that's why leaders also, or managers, or whoever is doing the feedback, has to show some personal vulnerability along the way. And I think, Laurie, as you said, build trust, because then, you know, people will come in. You have to make it okay to make mistakes, too. Failure is part of growth.
I agree. But what about, I know don't have much time, but emotional intelligence and neuroscience, I know you focus in on that. How do you bring that into leadership coaching?
I think emotional intelligence has become coin of the realm, and that it's people are more aware of it, particularly as we've gone through very human crises. We've had to get the compassion part, and you can sort of scan for it. I've been doing some research on personality assessments, which I'm sure you can imagine I don't care for, and they pigeonhole way, way, way too much. So, you know, you have to be able to grow, and emotional intelligence accepts flaws in people and helps them grow. So I think that that's important. What was the other one you asked me about, emotional development, emotional intelligence, and the other?
Well, just neuroscience itself, you know, brain science, as you call it.
Oh, yeah, neuroscience. Well, it's very important because once you know the way the brain works, you know how best learning best takes place. You learn how to ask questions that are for information. You learn how not to give advice because the brain shuts down on that. You learn about, or I learned a lot about the different levels of threat and how to mitigate them. There's a lot that's been done in categorizing biases through brain science. There are a great, I mean, I was taking a course and there were some interesting studies on what state your brain has to be in to get a dopamine drop, like a hit of mild elation. And, you know, you have to have a quiet mind. You have to have no distractions. There are a couple of things, but to learn that about how the brain works and what it accepts and what it rejects is very, very useful in dealing with behaviors and leadership and managing people.
We're going to have you come back and tell us all about that. So we are out of time.
Danny,
how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, thank you for asking. So you can, my website's under development, but if you can reach me by email at dtk@dtkresources.com, or my office number, I'm giving that because if people are interested, it's 212-935-4480. If I don't pick up, I'm on another call or I'm coaching or Zooming or something, so leave a message and I'll get back to you.
Fantastic. I can't think of a better thing to start out our year with than some bold, challenging concepts, and you brought them to the table, Danny. Thank you so much. Bernie, stay warm up there, and the audience, we'll see you again in February. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Take care. Stay well.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.